Come now, all you mangy dogs. Swab the decks and hoist the sails. The guns on board be needing some proper manning. Pieces of eight and a fine wench on your arm, if your work be not too shoddy. Careful not to flounder too badly, though, or you may have to dance the hempen jig as we see you to Davy Jones. But Jeffy, my boy, on with the show.
Yard and Yardies. To our listeners from across all regions of the planet, welcome once again aboard the Robin Hood, flagship to the world's one and only cooperatively inspired charity podcast network. Saturday streaming today from under some of South Korea's cloudiest clam-covered skies, we're live with episode 48 of Pirate Radio Podcasts. I'm your host and ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Hoisting sails yet once again, today we welcome back former guest and author of Two in the Collectors, Floridian Tom Schaefer. For the next 90 minutes or so, we'll be hashing over pretty much anything to do with Star Trek, the mysterious world of ufology, TV and pop culture nostalgia, multimedia magic, Nashville, how to start your own religion, and life on a nuclear submarine. Doing it all once again this week via Skype as well, rather than Google Plus, as what we were for a while at least considering. Tom, that works a little better for you, I guess, does it?
I don't think I heard the first part of your question.
Oh, just pointing out how we're running the show through Skype today rather than Google Plus, because it's just a platform you're a little more comfortable with, is what you're telling us this today.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more I'll go with that. Let's go with that.
So yeah, it's just one of the things we've been working on doing. Just running with well, bottom line, of course, is we do whatever it takes to accommodate the guests and makes them feel most comfortable at home.
Special. You want me to feel special?
Hey, all of our guests are special. That's right. Why we invite them and get them lined up, and we want to talk to them. So yeah, you betcha.
So we've tried to get together for a while. I mean, it's been, yeah. I don't know, gosh, a good year, I imagine.
No. As was pointed out there, you couldn't hear it with the introduction. It was streaming over YouTube there. Was the fact that episode number 10 was the show we had you on way back in the day there. But then we also had you join us to ride shotgun as co-host for the Fukushima special. You remember that, don't you?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. That was a blast.
Sure was. And once again, just to, as was talked about or hit on in the introduction, once, you know, yet again, was how Tom actually helped. Without your assistance, we would not have this show. We would not be set up as we are, streaming live via YouTube and the like, unless you had to draw our attention to OBS and how it works, what it's all about, and what you can do with it. So thanks once again, the captain.
Yeah, man.
More than happy to have you.
Absolutely. I mean, YouTube has given a platform that leaves you almost without excuse to not be on it, as far as what you get, as far as the platform, what it delivers. I mean, they even give you the software to stream with. I don't know of any other platform that has that massive of a capability. They have this massive platform, but they also give you revenue. They've already got the advertisers covered, so all you need to do is come up with good content, mm-hmm. You know, and you've got a great show.
There you go. And which is something that you're actually doing yourself, I guess, one of the things that you contacted us with here. Oh, there's that heavy breathing again that we,
oh, that's a feature. That's a feature.
That's the value added content from Tom. But yeah, so your multimedia company, that was the basis on which I think we most recently got in touch before getting the show booked. Is it you and your brother are collaborating? You're so busy. You got so many things on the go, of course, and irons in the fire. That's just one of the projects. But tell us a little bit more about that, if you would, or just even before you get into that whole business, for people who may have not heard the show that we did located back in the archives there, whether it was episode number 10 or with the when you joined and were co-hosts there for the Fukushima special. Who is Tom Schaefer?
Who is Tom Schaefer? Yeah, there's a lot of different facets. So, I mean, which Tom Schaefer do you want to talk about? I've got a bunch of different projects going on, so I guess there's a lot of different facets. My brother and I collaborated on this media company because we see that the way the workaday world, a lot of what everything is happening is all moving to media. It's all moving to an entertainment type of society. As you deindustrialize society, you're getting more and more entertainment oriented, and there's a constant need for new content, and it can't be offshored. What I do here can't be given away to or done by other countries. It's got to be done. What we do is done here. We saw an incredible opportunity with this whole YouTube platform and said, you know what, we got to do something. So we started kicking it into high gear, and I got a local client who's interested in doing a regular weekly episode, kind of a vlog, not quite a reality show, but kind of a vlog, show people how to cook fish and about his fishing business, which has got all kinds of this guy's got all kinds of stuff going on. But anyway, so we landed him as a client. I've got some other clients, and it's taken off.
Tom, is it vlog or vlog? I've always pronounced it vlog.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's like what
vlog
is that? Video
and vlog.
Video logging.
And, yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so this is kind of a nice little light look at the guy's business. It's a lot of fun, and we'll shoot another episode tomorrow.
Well, you're doing some great stuff for sure. We looked, that's one of the reasons we had you back. It's like, it was pretty much a no-brainer, really. It's like, you've got something to offer the public here and just present to them. And a lot of eye candy and just great wizardry, you know, technical and creative wizardry there with the use of camera and all kinds of the software and programs that you've got running, networks you're tied into and so on and so forth. So.
Oh man, I tell you, it's I'm busy is the understatement. Mm-hmm. There's just so much going on from so many different angles. But
now we've also got your slideshow going here for you as well too. So courtesy of the OBS the software, and that was one of the first things you turned us on to. Actually, said, hey, by the way, do you know you could run a slideshow? So I'm watching that live here as well as a few other people here in the Rogues Gallery. The feature show end of the Rogues Gallery. And after things wrap up, we kind of take things more behind the scenes to the where we have our archived content. I'm not sure if you're going to be able to make that part of things tonight. I'll just play it by ear, I suppose. No, it's pretty late out there. Where exactly in Florida are you located out of?
I'm in a secret bunker, secret location, secure bunker.
Aren't we all? Aren't we all?
That's right. That's right. No, I'm actually in what's known as the Treasure Coast area.
Ooh.
And
pirates like
it's
that.
The east side of it's the, yeah. In fact, this area is the as you can I can see on the slides there. You're showing some of my stuff, which is rather stalkerish of you guys. But
value added content.
Well, yeah, those are slides of the area, and it's just a really cool area. It's very laid back, very kind of a rural Mayberry RFD essence to the area, and so it's very low pressure, and you have a lot of tourists come here. They want to go fishing, so there's a lot of guys that have boats, and they take people out on these boats to go fishing on fishing tours, and so there's kind of a whole fishing culture here, and it might not seem like there's a lot going on here, but there's several really cool elements to this place, and that's the fishing culture, and then there's a really big biker bar here that has a lot of C and B level blues bands come through. on their tours. So yeah, so we got some great music. So
you've been out there shooting a lot of these bikers. I mean, not in that way, of course, but you know, with the
exactly
kamikaze. Yeah,
that's right.
I'm the biggest badass of them all.
That's right. No,
with your cameras.
It's just a lot of guys. What's funny is this is a kind of a retirement area. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of guys that are 50 plus. They've got nice bikes or they've got collector cars. I've never been in a town with so many collector cars. It's just amazing. It's almost like being in Southern California with all the different collector vehicles that I see around. Just beautiful big boats, older sports cars, just all manner of collector cars in this part of the country. I've never seen, you know, there's car clubs and just, you know, you'll see beautiful, you know, old Mercedes SLs or some, mm-hmm. there's some Model Ts or some Roadsters.
You betcha. Oh, yeah.
Little tiny car clubs, these guys that do these little tiny cars. It's kind of crazy for this part of the country because it's not a huge population.
Big money. And, a lot of money, I think. You know, the GDP or whatever, the people that have, with the history of, it's a lot of retirees, correct? I think is what you said.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a huge retirement. Yeah, absolutely, a retirement base. Absolutely.
Much in the way of newlyweds as well, or is it just more the nearly deads?
Well, the funny thing about Sebastian, it's in between Vero Beach and Melbourne. And mm-hmm. Melbourne is a little bit more, you've got more what they call the Space Coast culture, which is all your Cape Canaveral and your whole NASA uh-huh. community and a lot of right. engineering companies that are around all that. That's up in Melbourne. And so you get a little broader, you know, you've got a lot more young people. It's more of a city town, large metro area. Then Vero Beach is the same way. You've got a bigger population at both ends. So Sebastian's in the middle and it's just a big town. So it's still got a kind of a rural essence to it. And people here are just friendly. You don't have to worry about much. Never had a problem with everybody here is so friendly. It completely changed my view of Florida. Where I lived in South Florida, it's a much edgier culture. More of a tension down in South Florida.
Miami, and I'm not up to speed on the geography. I'm a Canadian expat here living in Korea once again.
Well,
people aren't aware, but
I think a third of Canada emigrates to Miami during the wintertime. I mean, they just abandon ship. You see license plates from Quebec and all over Canada. It's just amazing how many people come down. Yeah.
The snowbirds, I think, is what they're called.
Absolutely. They've known it for years. I think, in Canadians, there was never a ban on going to Cuba, so you guys could go to Cuba.
Yeah.
Like going anywhere, like going to the Bahamas was
sure.
for us, you know.
Yeah. Well, Trudeau, the former Trudeau, the current prime minister's father, was, I think, quite chummy with Castro. In fact, Castro attended Pierre Elliott. His funeral back around 2000 or so, I guess it was. I think he was about 80 years old, died from prostate cancer. But the two of them, very, very kind of a bit of a bromance going on there, I guess. And so, yeah, so that was quite something to take note of. But leaving that aside for the moment, I'm not sure. Did we might have. I'm just going to check here and see if we – did we lose – Pirate Larry along the way there somehow? I'm not sure. Did he ever make it up to the crow's nest? He was supposed to be up there, but there's kind of a little bit of fog there.
I'm here, Jeff. I'm here.
Oh, that's great. So that's good to hear. How are things with you down in Ensenada today, Larry? I know you're just – and we'll come back to you in a second here, Tom. It's not like we're forgetting about you, but
– No worries. We're standing by.
Already. Well – So, yeah, I think you were saying something earlier about something to do with – you have a theory, and, you know, this is one of the things I never brought up in our earlier shows.
Well, it's a conspiracy theory, but I don't know. I think it'll prove out pretty well. You know, I was
right.
like – since January 20th, we've had, like, beautiful blue skies, you know. I mean, we did have that storm go through, but after the storm went through, like, all the protests and everything, we had these beautiful blue skies. And then – Peña Nieto, the president of Mexico, has a phone call with Donald Trump, and they both get mad at each other. And the next thing I know, the next day, I've got chemtrail-covered skies, crisscrossed all over Mexico.
Right.
And so I'm thinking, well, Peña Nieto, I mean, you better, I don't know, don't get Trump too angry, or we're going to be, you know, covered in this chemtrail cloud stuff.
Yeah, and that is the basically, and that's one of the things I was going to ask you about, this big storm that came in and hit you guys just a couple weeks ago there, was whether or not there was some sort of Tesla-based technology, scalar weaponry, geoengineering, that kind of angle, HARP, of course, you know, the kind of things that the establishment media never talk about for some strange reason, as if it doesn't exist, or it's just all just a lot of imaginary kind of, you know, poppycock. What would you say the chances are of that having played a role with the recent storms and havoc?
I think there was some geoengineering. I think there was some directed energy at, you know, now we don't get hurricanes up here because the water's too cold. But there were 78-mile-an-hour winds in that storm, and so that's a pretty severe storm. Hurricane winds are 90 miles an hour plus. You know, it was a pretty powerful storm that came through. And it was interesting to me that in one huge swell of storms, which came down from the Arctic, you know, it didn't come up from the south. So this came down from the Arctic. And, you know, it basically, California, which has been in a drought for what, 5-8 years, it's now water flush.
Okay, Tom, I think you probably have a few thoughts on these matters as well. I'm not sure where you stand on the whole, you know, the whole business of weather warfare, scalar weaponry, and that sort of business. But well,
the whole chemtrail and weather war, all of it. I think the most frustrating part is most people, when you show them the facts, they go, wow, man, I had no idea. Wow, really? And then you look up and you go, well, what can I do about it? And so most people, after a while, they get frustrated. They speak out. They talk. They start telling their neighbors, hey, look up. Yeah. And they start explaining it to them. No, that's a contrail. No, that is not a regular contrail. And you start going through all these different stages with people. And some come away and they go, wow, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. And they really want to know more. And then there's the bulk of the people out there that just don't want to know. They don't want to believe it. They come up with everything under the sun to deny it. Right. And it's a very bizarre world in which we live, in which people just, they won't look at evidence.
I think, cognitive dissonance. Is that not what it's known as?
Yeah, it's got to be that. Bizarre. And these people that get sucked into the whole flat earth thing, I'm, are mm-hmm. you kidding me? Oh, my God. Yeah, it's just they think, well, you know, there might be something to this. You know, I was just cleaning my pipe out and thinking about this. And you're like, what? What do you mean? What are you talking about? It's fucking nonsense. Excuse my French. But it's just nonsense.
It is a pirate ship, so the occasional profanity-laced language.
We'll slip out from time to time.
We can live with that. Pirate Larry, speaking of which, you know, the Robin Hood and protocol here. We have had Tom join us a few times in the past. What do you think as far as we should get him to share another pirate story with us, though, shouldn't we?
You know, Tom's a pirate, but, you know, he's a Florida pirate. But I always love to hear pirate stories. So if you got one, Tom, you know, the spotlight's on you, bro.
but has Long John the Captain, St. Clair, has he actually said that Tom's a part of the crew yet or not? Have you heard, Larry? Has he brought him on board?
No, I haven't heard, but, I mean, one who goes back as far as OBS software, introducing that to the club, I would think that the captain would, you know, be mindful of that as he considers our friend Pirate Tom over here.
We'll talk to him later. Maybe he'll come on and join us after, near the end of the show or something like that. He usually tunes in. So, Tom, if you care to respond, or if you have something that you've got maybe in mind that you're thinking listeners might be interested in hearing, by all means, let's let a pirate rip story.
Okay, what qualifies for a pirate story, number one? What is your basic criteria? What are you looking for?
It's not that complicated, really. Usually it's more just a formality than anything else, but just an angle of some kind, or, you know, the first time you saw a pirate movie, or you spent time out on the high seas in a nuclear submarine for a few years, so, you know, maybe you came across the occasional Somali pirate or something. That would probably work. You know, just a little something.
No, we weren't doing anything like that. We were just coincidentally nearby a foreign country, monitoring their intelligence, monitoring what they were up to, and so I got to do that for a few months, and that was an interesting time. all that stuff that you hear about in Hunt for Red October, short of the sci-fi aspect, which was the weird worm drive. We were doing a lot of the same stuff that was in that movie. But the movie was a little bit kind of melodramatic. It's a little bit more science than drama in the submarine Navy. Yeah, so we saw some interesting times. It was a very interesting time, I think. And then there's still probably boats out there right now, you know.
You on think? Patrol. I would imagine more than a few. And that's the thing too. 24/7, 365. I don't think they take Christmas off, unless it's under the Obama administration, where I'm not sure if you heard or not, but in the lead up to the transition to Trump, Obama and his people, apparently they brought all the naval forces, American U.S. naval power, into port, which supposedly goes totally against protocol. Is that not the case?
I mean, what goes against the protocol?
Or is this fake news that I've fallen?
Oh, we've had fake news for a long time. Since the Spanish. What was the Spanish? Yeah. The Spanish American War. Or people talking about fake news, they're talking about spin or editorial opinioning. You know, adding an editorial opinion to a story, which is what everybody does now. We don't just tell you the story. Now we have to add all these editorial layers and commentary.
Sure.
You know.
Or just something that's completely fabricated. It has no bearing or basis in reality.
Fact.
Yeah,
right.
Whatsoever. It's just like, here's a little infotainment that's going to titillate you, and we're going to be able to generate a few hundred thousand clicks on and rack up a little.
It's nuts. It's nuts. I'm telling you. It's kind of disheartening to think that here we are, this planet that has some amazing technology. You know, if you think about all the technology that goes into displaying on your smartphone, whether it doesn't matter whether it's an Android or an iOS, it doesn't really matter. But you look at the technology that goes into that little panel, that little tablet, and all the other electronics that we have. You look at all that amazing technology. You hear about new software every day. Somebody told me about a guy that's designing a microscope that can see down to atoms. And so they've got a company that's building these microscopes that see down to atom levels. They can look at how the atoms are actually interchanging or whatever, however they're linked or whatever. So we have all this massive technology, and yet conversely, we have this massive dumbing down to where people will just buy into complete loads of garbage. It's just unbelievable what people will buy into now.
Well, you're talking about things from a physics standpoint of the quantum physics, essentially. But time crystals, remember we were talking about that in the lead up the other day with Pyrolarin?
What I'm saying is it's not about that. It's about we've gone to this amazing revolution in technology, and yet conversely, the people, a large portion of this planet, has been dumbed down.
Yeah, idiocracy.
To such a degree. Yeah, it is. It's an idiocracy.
Pokemon Go.
It's the irony. It's the irony or the converse. These two juxtapositions.
Juxtaposition, yeah.
Thing, whatever, I don't know if that's correct. But you have these two opposing forces.
Sure.
This massive technology coupled with massive ignorance. It's just really scary.
Yet at the same time, we hear all this talk of a massive kind of awakening. So what's going on?
No, absolutely. There is an absolute awakening. There are people that are talking about massive amounts of energy being beamed at this planet to wake people up. So there's a lot of conversation now. All of a sudden, there is a sense that I've noticed in the last 6 months of a kind of something's different, a shift, if you will, which some of these people are talking about a shift. And I've noticed there has been a paradigm shift. Trump is part of it. The politics have changed. We have so many different elements at play right now, but it is a massive shift that it comes out to. And I think it's true.
We've got a few comments here of people just contributing discussion material and thoughts in the sidelines here and with YouTube, the streaming chat. Including there's Joe 333 wants to know if we've had a chance yet to check out Joe Rogan 9/11. That would be with Alex Jones, of course, and the whole Pizzagate. To call it a scandal is to be mild. I think really quite polite.
I don't even know what to believe. I don't even know what to believe on all of it. There's so much. And see, here's another problem that we have in the media is there's this high level of propaganda that's going on right now. It's, I was at one point, there was a side of me that I kind of thought Alex Jones was cool. That lasted about 2 years. In the last several years, the guy is completely off the chain. But the one thing that was always true was his little phrase that he says, which is, there's a war on for your mind. Mm-hmm. I think that the war has been stepped up into major proportions now.
Yeah.
I think it's in a major. And every time I tell people, every time you feel yourself getting a little bit worked up because of something that you saw in the news, there's a reason you're worked up.
Sure.
Somebody wants you to be worked up.
Yeah.
Somebody doesn't want to just report the news. Somebody wants you to get a little worked up. Somebody wants you in the street. Somebody wants you engaged. And so there's a massive amount of manipulation going on. It's just unbelievable.
Time. Oh, totally. Yeah. And we got the Televallium group here. I'm just copying the link for people right now. In fact, out of minds.com, social media and information sharing network, of which you are a part of, although I don't think you're overly active at this point. Maybe that'll change as time goes on here, but we'll see how that goes. But,
I'm the plumber with the leaky faucets. You know, these are all things that I like to get involved in. And at most, I can dabble in them a little bit right now because of everything that I've got going on. Uh-huh. But, I'm totally supportive. I think it's a great idea. Oh,
that's great. Mm-hmm. Well, no censorship, right? Booster points, encrypted chat. What else? There's just so many different aspects to it. The hashtag, they got that.
I haven't even scratched the surface. I'm just awful. I haven't even scratched the surface. I know they have a lot of benefits there, and I just haven't really had the time to really get in. I'll have to check it out.
Well, we promoted the show there a little bit in the lead up to things here today. So our followers, basically, they come from minds.com. If you're just like still stuck on Facebook, we do whatever. We do them all. We don't care. Why discriminate?
Well, the truth is,
we enjoy Minds Facebook, the most, of course.
Facebook is that seething cauldron.
That's the Kraken.
Humanity.
That's the Kraken.
It is the mass of humanity. And you can reach. That's who. That when you want to reach. It's great if you understand how to market on Facebook. For me, the best way to market on Facebook was with YouTube and getting into various groups. And some of these groups have 30, 40,000 people in them. And it's almost like Facebook is handing you this 48,000 member email list, because everybody that's in that group gets an email as soon as somebody drops something in those groups. Boom, shakalaka. It goes out to every member in that group, gets a notification. And so it's kind of a hidden jewel. So as much as Facebook, you can malign it because of whatever reason, right? Pretty much most of it, the number of people that are on that platform, it's an unbelievably awesome tool
right.
for marketing.
Yeah. So. No, yeah. Well, it sucks on so many different levels. I don't really want to get into the details right now. But
God, it's awful.
Right.
It's just awful.
Yeah, it is. We
call it. I feel dirty. I feel dirty when I get on Facebook. I feel like I got to go take a shower after I'm done. I'm like, I got to get away from this.
Being in the Navy, you would be familiar with the term FUBAR.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Former military. Yes.
Absolutely.
So we got a group, actually, another group on minds.com that's called Facebook FUBAR, one of the items that they're actually featuring right now. So that's good. And it's pretty active, and a lot of people not happy with Facebook. A lot of people have left and for other places like Minds. Or there's another social media platform called Gab, I guess, or something like that. I haven't really checked it out. I've heard about it a little bit.
Think about it. The big platforms, they're like these internet black holes. They capture all this traffic and gravity towards themselves. So when you tell people to come to another site, it's like, what? I got to go over here now. You got to make me move my hand.
Right, you
need to click on this over here.
Yeah.
It's like, are you kidding me? You can't step away from the mundane recipe. I could go for 2 hours on the whatever it is about Facebook that we just can't stand. But anyway, getting people to come over to another network does seem problematic. It's like, can you come out to the website? Really? I got to type that in? You serious? I got to type in your domain name? Oh, my God. It's like people are getting lazier and lazier, I think.
You're absolutely right. Speaking of which, it's interesting you reference that term. Mr. Lazy Hippie just dropped in to check things out. So welcome aboard, Mr. Lazy Hippie. Don't think so. I haven't seen you around here too much to this point. But we'll see if he's got any comments or thoughts to offer regarding some of our discussion material today. What are you blowing on there, man? You got like an old Coke bottle or something, or what is that?
No, that is a Nevada Pale Ale Torpedo.
Ah, I see.
See, it's middle of the day for you. You could have one. You're European. You could have one.
You know, the booze thing, the alcohol, I'm mostly just coffee, tea, whatnot, other than Christmas. And listeners will know that I was hitting the rum pretty, quite liberally, you know, a very liberal, you know, consumption of rum over Christmas and New Year's. But it's all the Kahlua and Bailey's. They're all gone. And, the alcohol thing is pretty, I try to watch my step with alcohol. It's just led to so many problems. Not only for me personally in the past, but just everybody.
Is that the understatement of the year?
I'm trying to be diplomatic, I guess. So
trying to sound nice. Well, make it sound nice for grandma.
It's torn so many families apart. It's just the social, the destruction, it's just destroyed so many people's lives, their careers. People dying, getting sick, maybe some people bouncing back, I guess, or the long road to recovery in many cases, too. So let me just – I'm going to go back here. There's a few more comments that are kind of streaming in here as we speak. Joe Eminon talking about – says it sounds really good, so that's always great to hear. Joe, one of the regular – the crew members here. We got a pair of Pirate Joes, actually. I'd like to kind of hang out and be part of the show. Joe 333 is another. The two of them make a great two-punch combination. So, but yeah, hashtag FSD. For people that don't know, that stands for Full Spectrum Dominance. Look it up. Don't use Google. Go to DuckDuckGo. Who else do we got here? What else do we have happening on? Just the last little comment or two is Joe Eminon would like to know what boat you were on, an SN-667 or 688?
I was on one of the old 637s.
Okay.
And, yeah, what happened is, as the Cold War finally ramped up, the Navy came out with a class of boat called, it was the 637, the Sturgeon class submarine, and it became the base model for 40 other boats that were built using that same plan. And there was slight modifications between them, but, that boat was one of the best designs the Navy ever came out with. It had five, watertight compartments. And it's just a well-designed ship. That was the lead fast attack defense against the Russians, those 40 boats. And before that, there was what they called the Thresher class, which was the infamous Thresher sinking. Well, after that happened, they came out with the next version after that, which was the 637. And those boats are some of the best boats ever built that they had in the Navy. They had the ability to go deeper than a lot of the newer boats. The deeper you go, the more it costs to protect against that depth. And so a lot of the newer boats don't go quite as deep. But, it was a fascinating class of boat. I think there's maybe one or two left, from what somebody told me. But, yep, I was on the 647.
How many years? I
wasn't in that long. I was only in my. I was only a one tour guy, so.
All right. So I think we just got another question.
No, I don't have any Rickover stories. Somebody wanted to know if I had any Rickover stories. Ooh. No, Hyman Rickover was the father of the nuclear Navy, and he was very Rickover. Well, the only thing I can say about Rickover is anybody that was a nuclear officer at that time in that era had been interviewed by Rickover. He interviewed all nuclear officers coming out. He wanted to talk to them and get to know them a little bit and look at them and see if they were nuts or if they had their head screwed on straight. And he was known to dismiss people out of the nuclear power program if they salted their food without tasting it. He looked for little weird quirks in people to see if he could read them, to see if they would crack under pressure. Because you're running a nuclear reactor on a combat submarine. You're not just having Jacques Cousteau time. We're running a combat vessel with a nuclear reactor. So these people had to be tested and vetted and vetted and tested and vetted constantly. And so Rickover was that much of a perfectionist. If the civilian power plants were run to the same rigor, you wouldn't have anything to worry about from the civilian nuclear world. Okay. U.S. Navy nuclear is very strict.
You would imagine. Sure.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Very strict.
Pirate Larry looks like sounds like he's got a Rickover story. So I guess now's as good a time as any. Let's hear it. Let's hear it from you there, Pirate Larry.
Yeah. What's the deal? So my dad used to write the speeches for Admiral Rickover.
In Washington. Really? Wow.
Yeah. And one of the stories about Rickover was that he had this chair, his interview chair, in his office. His office had a linoleum floor, which he would not let them change the linoleum floor. They had to patch it. They couldn't put in any other kind of floor.
He was an eccentric, no doubt.
And he had somebody come in and cut a quarter inch off of one of the legs of his interviewing chair so that the interviewee would sit there in a wobbling chair. And then he'd ask you a bunch of questions and see how you'd react to your wobbling chair.
Yeah, he played little mind games with people. That was definitely what I remember hearing about him. And, there was no escape. His little twisted... I think that was the ultimate thing he was looking for, was to see what people would crack from.
Sounds like some kind of former German Nazi or Dr. Strangelove type character. You know, paperclip.
But you know what? As much as he pissed everybody off, he was right. That's what pisses everybody off. He was right. He was right. And so he couldn't argue with it after they looked at the evidence. It's like, successful. Ever had an accident? Nope. Ever had any kind? Nope. Everything was always top of the there were no accidents or slop. He didn't allow for that. So yes, he was an interesting creature, but I think that's what it took to keep it safe. You know, you need somebody that was that, if you will, anally retentive about the whole thing, who was obsessed with it. He was obsessed with the success of it. He couldn't have a failure. There will be no failure.
There was actually, I'm not sure if you know much about this, and Larry, is there anything more that you'd like to add to that as far as the Rickover stories or any further contacts or additions?
No, but I'd just like to mention a guy named William Wagner, Bill Wagner, who was like an engineer that worked under Rickover, and he used to do like boiler room to boardroom audits, and he was the same kind, very careful person.
Yeah, and I think as Tom makes clear, you with a job like that, you'd probably have to be. It kind of comes with the territory. So, you're bang on the mark there. Of course, Tom, nobody wants any accidents, do they? So there's one famous story you might not be familiar with. It's kind of interesting. I'll maybe share the links with you and the listeners after we wrap things up here, of course. There was a bomber, a U.S. Nuclear-equipped bomber loaded with, I'm not sure what exactly, but there was some sort of, kind of Hiroshima, Nagasaki-type weapons that crashed in the central interior of British Columbia back in the late 40s, early 50s, and nobody really heard about it or knew about it, at least not from a civilian standpoint, I don't think, for quite some time. They managed, the powers that be, the authorities, managed to keep that keep it hushed up and keep the lid on it. Are you familiar with that story? Any more detail regarding that one? No,
I am not.
Yeah.
I am not.
I'm not, neither am I, so that's why we try to get people like yourself. I know it's like, you know, submarines, airplanes, you know, like, you know, that Air Force, the different kind of deal there naturally. But it was on its way up to Alaska, I guess, and blown off course, or they had to basically, you know, bring the plane down for some reason. So, but we'll look into that. I think it's something Arrow, like Broken Arrow, some Operation Broken Arrow, something along those lines. But
were they dropped a nuclear weapon? And it got lost?
They landed, they crashed, and they might have even jettisoned the payload out at sea, perhaps, and whether it went off or not, who knows, I have no idea.
Well, there was an action movie with, John Travolta, and I don't know, one of these over-dramatized John Travolta and Nicolas Cage movies.
Overpaid, overexposed.
Yeah, just overdone all the way around. Obviously, you know, that high production value, that action movie, and that had the deal where I think John Travolta was stealing the weapon, and Nicolas Cage or somebody was trying to prevent him from stealing it. I forget the movie, but anyway, that's the only one I remember called Broken Arrow.
If I knew something more about that, I would be happy to add a few more thoughts. But unfortunately, no, I think I stopped watching movies in a big way, as you know, much as is the case with popular music. sometime around probably the mid 1990s, you know, and it's been just slowly, occasionally I get like friends and whatnot draw certain things to my attention. And, you know, we go out and, you know, we see the Lord of the Rings or whatever. There's some other big ones that we've seen. The wife is more into, supporting Hollywood in that kind of like, yeah, we'll go to the theater and buy the popcorn and the cola and all that kind of good stuff. And sometimes, you know, the movies that we choose, usually we do go out to, typically are quite good, but there's just so much these days. That's the thing. Even with podcasts, for crying out loud, it's like everyone and their dog has a podcast. So hopefully what you're putting out there is something that is a little different than the rest and, on whatever level, who knows. Maybe the guests, the quality guests you get, or the content once again. But I know one of the things that we're trying to do here is have people that the general public maybe have not heard about as much as the Jim Mars or Alex Jones or Linda Moulton Howe types or any of these other well-known, you know, speakers and people that make the podcast.
What are you saying?
I'm dude, when's the last time you're on Coast to Coast AM? Let's put it that way, huh? When's the last time?
Really? Did you get on there?
No, when's the last time you were on Coast to Coast AM?
No, I haven't had any interest, to be quite honest. I have not had any interest in being on Coast to Coast.
Well, there you go. So, yeah, but I mean, I think you could
These are more fun. These are more informal.
Sure.
Less, I think, commercialized. I think there's a little bit more freer flowing format here.
Yeah. You know, one angle that I do see where Coast to Coast you could potentially do it if you were so inclined is your Free People of the Cosmos project. Something that we want to talk about. I'm not sure if we want to get into it right now. It's up to you. We'll leave this up to you. What do you think? Are we going to do
Absolutely.
Star Trek? Well, how about we haven't gotten to Star Trek yet. Star Trek, Cara Dune, and the Kung Fu series, or your Free People of the Cosmos project? Which one would you like to...
Dude, the Freeples thing is where it's at.
Freeples, right.
My brother calls it Freeples.
Oh,
I have a
okay.
twin brother. So he and I, I talked to you earlier about the media company. Well, we partnered also on a 501(c), which we wanted to have an outlet. We wanted to have some kind of a charitable outlet. So it became that. And it has become this, and it's the Free People of the Cosmos. And it's a atheistic charity, but really it's a space exploration and science fellowship. People that want to hang together that have a space science mindset, you know, they're into that area of thinking, not necessarily working in the industry, but those are the kind of interests they have. That's what it is. And we decided, you know what, well, let's make it a charity where people could contribute to it if they wanted to, and it would be tax deductible as a religious organization. So it's no different than giving to us or giving to anybody else. But the thing is, we're not based on any kind of a religion. It's an anti-religion church, if you will.
Yeah, that's where we get kind of philosophical. I'm not sure if I would want to help. Much I would want to take you to task on that or call you or anybody else out on it, because my approach, and I'm not sure how many people share in this, but I take a very cosmic approach to the idea of religion, in the sense that it's everything we do. It's the air we breathe, the food we eat, the clothes we wear, the music we listen to or don't, TV and movies that we do or don't. It's all about choices and decisions, as well as those core values and principles. You know, that's a good part of it.
See, you're already one of us. You're already one of us now. In that respect, absolutely.
You just converted me, man. See how easy it is to convert people.
See how easy, dude. We're easy.
You're one of us.
That's right. See, you are one of us.
But
and that is most people are actually one of us. The thing is, it's just we're just saying, okay, here we are, and this is who we are. I'm a guy standing on a rock in a universe. You know, that's who I am. I don't have borders. I'm not owned by anybody. I'm a free person of this cosmos.
Freeples?
Freeples? Are the Freeples.
Freeples.
We are the Freeples. That's it, buddy. We're the Freeples. My brother's the one that came up with that.
That's great. Yeah. We're streaming.
So we're the Freeples.
Right now, we're actually streaming your radio channel that you've got up, your website.
Radionomy. Those are the people that let you put up a shoutcast station. You can put your station on there.
Uh-huh. Prayers for Rain.
Yeah.
Prayers for Rain, now where did this come from? Who put that together? Was that your own creation, you and your brother?
The radio station is an opportunity for you as a content provider to broadcast on Shoutcast. And now they pay, just like YouTube does. They pay for, you put the content up and they take care of the licensing. And it's mainly geared at music. So they take care of paying back whatever licensing occurs because you made up, you know, you play a particular track that all has to be paid back to artists. So they worked a deal, and I really don't know the details, but all we can do is speculate based on what's on the forums, is I think that AOL bought up the Shoutcast server network. And so all of those internet radio stations that you see in iTunes, when you go, when you have to click a special menu pick to go to internet radio. And when you do in iTunes, you'll see all these stations. You're like, wow, what is all this? And a lot of it is what they call terrestrial radio stations, people that have real radio, the transmitters and all the gear, they're transmitting radio. Those people, a lot of them have websites. And so they also have streams on the internet. But then there are independents like myself, who we stream from, literally from home or a home office or from, you know, a server somewhere. You can rent servers and you run your own channel and you can run your own programming. You can run your own music, your content, whatever, speeches, whatever you want to do, you know, anything you can stream on Shoutcast, just like you can on YouTube. So it's kind of a different sound only universe. It's, you know, there's no video. It's sound only, but it kind of appeals to, based on the numbers of connections we get, just what little we've done is utterly amazing. The number of people that are tapping into these kind of broadcasts. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so it's another channel.
You know. It sounds interesting and exciting. Something, in fact, I think, which I'm guessing Pirate Larry might have a few thoughts on. I bet I'm being the musician that he is, with a bit of history and experience under his belt. Pirate Larry, are you up to speed on these sort of platforms?
You know, I haven't really looked at Shoutcast, but I see, you know, it's coming up. I mean, a lot of hip hop people on my Twitter feed are using Shoutcast, and I guess it allows you to get notices, and that's an important thing for a band, especially if they're touring, or an artist if they're touring. You know, they need email addresses. They need to, you know, have folks, you know, in different towns and stuff promote their tour and buy their tickets, t-shirts.
It'd be great to get some royalty-free content, which we have to some degree up to this point via various indie artists that have told us we can use their music and material free of charge. Now, YouTube doesn't always necessarily see it that way, because in like instance such as with what we did with you, Pirate Larry, with Piratas de Dios, YouTube came back at us and said, this is not cool. You don't have permission to do this. So I think, well, we could talk about this later, of course, too, but maybe the best approach there would be to, well, for you to contact them and just explain, like, look, like, let these people, like, just, you know, let them, this is part of our deal here. They have permission to use our music, you know, like this person, right, that person, so on and so forth, rather than, well, from our end, it's a real pain in the butt. It's like, it's such a drawn out process. For me, at least looking at it, it's like, geez, this is going to take forever to put this stupid claim in for this, to get permission to use this person's material, whereas right, if exactly. The artist himself was to say, hey, look, YouTube, we, you know, these people are cool, they're okay, leave them alone.
Well, you can get that, but it takes, it's time consuming to get that kind of permission.
So we just said to hell with it, forget about it. So, Pirate Larry, anything more you'd like to add to things while we got you here on the horn?
Well, you know, don't give up on indie music. I think, you know, a lot of indie bands are just, they give you permission with links. And so, you know, that's what we got to work out, you know.
That's great.
With YouTube, you know, permission traded for links. And I've got somebody like, I've got TuneCore managing, you know, that stuff. And, you know, they make mistakes. So, you know, I have to log in and chastise them. But yeah, it always comes down to, like, you know, you automate everything and everything goes wrong. There has to be some kind of human in the process that goes, no, wait a minute, you know, you know, all your programming is wrong. So
pretty frustrating.
That's a bug, not
it's really, really frustrating.
That's a bug, not a feature. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll talk to you shortly then, I guess. How are things looking there, by the way, at the top of the perch today? Tonight, or, well, here in Korea, it's this afternoon, but just in the way your vantage point there, the way you see things.
Well, we have a half moon, you know, that's beginning to set on the horizon, and you can see the stars, and Venus is below the half moon. So it's a beautiful night, a little bit chilly, but beautiful night. I hope the chemtrails go away. And we'll have blue skies tomorrow.
Looking forward to it. That sounds great. Hopefully we'll end up with the same here. So, Tom, how about, I'm not sure if you want to talk a little bit more about Free People of the Cosmos. It's there's a lot to it, of course, and we've got links here to your websites, both your music as well as your main website here for
the music is not just, I'm not making any music. I mean, I'm just playing some albums. I'm playing some great meditation CDs and whatnot are on rotation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much, it is kind of automated, but it's not, you know, it's not, I didn't make any of the music. I'm just playing other people's music, playing some very good stuff. So yeah, definitely worth checking out if you like meditation music, earth music or world music, they call it.
But no, is this a spoof idea, basically, in philosophy, in this way, the Dudism or Discordianism, or the Church of the Subgenius, you know, or is it more? Is it more? Are you trying to make some kind of real point, or is it a serious kind of trying to take a serious? Semi-serious.
You know, I thought, I'm absolutely glad you asked that question.
You'll get it out eventually. Don't worry. Believe me.
Well, I'm glad you asked that question.
Yeah.
There's a focus. And so the idea was to create a charity. We wanted to do some good things. So we have two things going. My brother and I are kind of uniting after, you know, we're in our 50s. So we're uniting on something where he's had his life, I've had mine. This is the first thing we've united on in since we were kids, as any kind of projects. So this is it's a first between my brother and I, even though we're twins.
Right,
we have
exactly.
lived separate lives. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so this is kind of cool. So the charity is one aspect. We wanted to have one venture going that was charity. That got, like, for example, we want to try to put together some beach cleanups. Now, I don't know. It's all very ambitious at this point. It may have chewed a bit off more than I could chew trying to run that and do this thing with the media company, so I don't even know. But we wanted to get started. We want to at least get the crack the seal on it, if you will, and put some of these concepts down and be in that arena, you know, with a charity ready to go. And, yes, it has a church designation, which gives us a lot more latitude. We also embrace a lot of indigenous native philosophies and Native American medicine. So it is kind of an atheistic fellowship of people that just want to talk about ideas that relate to more of a galactic perspective than just an earth perspective. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. You said you based it on the John Oliver model, that being the John Oliver from the TV satiricist and commentator. Is that right?
Right. Well, the thing is he mentioned something. It's kind of like an obvious moment. You know, he formed a church as a jest and wound up raising it. I don't think around close to $70,000, and wound up paying off a lot of medical debt with it. And I thought, what a great idea. We create something that's generic in nature that anybody can land on. It doesn't take any, there's no political affiliation necessary. The only thing we have as far as an organization goes is you can't be a hater. If you bring hate in, can't bring in hater ideas, sorry, can't be a hater and be a part of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's all we got. That's the only requirement. Can't be a hater. So we wanted to give a place for people to land that want to do some cool things, and yet at the same time we get the benefit of a church-based fellowship. So it is, there is a bit of a tongue-in-cheek church thing going on, yet at the same time it gives us a platform to do charity work and get the benefit.
He actually, you're talking about medical bills, I believe, as I recall, it was to the tune of multiple millions of dollars.
Was it bigger than that? I thought it was only about $60,000 or $70,000. I didn't realize it was millions. Okay.
Yeah, I think it was, and it kind of made my eyes bugged out when I saw that. That was probably about a year or two ago, I guess, that was announced. So I didn't know there was a church tie-in that he had managed to put together his own.
It started off as a joke, and they actually wound up with money. That's what was funny about it. I said, you know what? Why don't you just be intentional about it? Why don't we just have an intention? And we're just going to call ourselves the, if I'm a free person, wait a minute, wait for it, the free people of the cosmos. And that's how it came together.
Well, okay.
What is a free person of the cosmos?
All right.
And a free person of the cosmos is a stateless, unowned entity, sentient being. I don't care what kind of a meat suit you wear, a free person in the cosmos might have a slightly different meat suit if they're from another planet that's maybe got less gravity, maybe they're bigger, maybe they're a little smaller, maybe they're humanoid, maybe they're whatever they are, but they're sentient beings like we are, so their meat suit doesn't count. So the free people of the cosmos identify with other free people of this same cosmos, or galaxy, local cluster, galaxy to galaxy, whatever. Anybody that's of a similar mindset has affinity with us. Does that make sense? So you're basically a free person of the cosmos.
Yeah, I understand. Whether we realize it or not, it's the same. I mean, Buddhists see the exact same way. I'm sure a lot of people do, depending one religion to the next, even if Buddhism really is a religion, if you want to get right down to it. But
yeah, so there's no real religion here, though. That's the best part about it. So it's kind of
right. Yeah, because there's no coercion, or you're not being compelled to.
What was the requirement for getting in?
Don't be a dick.
Not be a hater.
Don't
be a dick. Exactly. So you're in. Okay, you're in. Oh, okay. Can I get a beer? Absolutely. Get a beer. Can I have a joint? Go ahead. Have a joint. You want whatever. We're not into anything about putting restrictions on anybody.
There's a couple things here now. This kind of come to mind. One, of course, is that you've got a bit of a history yourself, as I recall, with your spiritual path, as it were. Secondly, number two, would be interesting if you could, we could have this addressed, you could talk, speak to it, that what would it take then for others to, if they say wanted to form their own little church, what would be required? Does it vary, I guess, from one nation to the next? Fall into line with.
Well, the interesting thing is, it's not like I'm trying to push this as an idea, so just get that. I'm just going to state clinically what it might take, because it's a guaranteed right in the United States Constitution is freedom of the expression of religion. And so the legal system has enabled a religious organization to exist tax exempt. That's the law of the land. So it's not like I'm trying to promote it. It's been the law of the land for a very long time.
A lot of people that don't like that as well, too, as you're well aware. They want to see that change so that it no longer is the case. Churches pay their taxes.
This is where people get limited in their thinking. This is, okay, now we need to define religions. What's a religion? What's not a religion? How can Satanism be a religion? How can these atheists be a religion? How can this nutty guy wants to do free people of the cosmos? Who is this guy? Okay, how can we have all that? We're the Christian nation. We're the Christians. We've been here since forever. And we're the way. This is how it's done. This is how we colonize. Can't you just shut up and be one of us? And there are a lot of people who are saying, well, actually, no, I don't want to be that. Like this woman that decided she wanted to be Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have that right. So it's almost like an intelligence test. If you don't do it, why are you not doing it? Is almost the question, because you have that right. And a lot of people say, well, I just don't have time for it. Okay, fine, go on, get about your business and be part of them that do instead of the people that don't. So it's up to you. I mean, it's an option that people have. And so for us, there's this commitment. We wanted to actually expand this into a reasonable charity. Problem is, it's a brand new concept, and so it's just going to take time for people to get familiar with it and who want to find out more. There is no real philosophy. There's nothing to sign off on. There's nothing to believe in. We just want to have people that want to do science and space exploration. That's all we're really interested in.
Inner space or outer?
Well, I mean, inner space could be part of it. People wanted it to be. I mean, that's up to them.
Yeah. So, how much paperwork was there involved? How much time did you have to put in?
You actually have to go to file your 501(c). You can do it through any of those online legal services will let you do it. You can file your 501(c).
This is all across the America, U.S., U.S. of A.
Yeah, and there's different states that have different fees for filing in that state, so you want to do a little research. But, and they actually do ask you some questions about purpose, so it's kind of like, yes, technically we're able to do this, but there is some vetting that goes on. They want to know that you want to do something. They want to see a website. They want to know a little bit about your organization. So you do have to do a little bit of discussion about who and what you are and what you want to do. So, you know, we just put up the website. We put up information about goals we might have. And if we can reach them, fine. I mean, if not, that's fine, too. I just felt that we needed to do something, and so we did something. Maybe it never does anything, but at least we started. At least
right.
We put it in place. That was the kind of thing we wanted to do.
Have you managed to generate any funds to this point for this?
You know,
for
we
charity?
Really haven't even had the time. We've only been in operation for a month.
Oh.
So, yeah. So, I mean, it's not really like we've been off the ground very long.
Right.
But, sooner or later, we'll do something with it. And I want to do meetup groups, too. I want to have meetup groups across the country, but... Me, I'm horrible on organizing. I need an organizer to help me get organized. I'd be more than happy to show up and hoot and holler, but getting the time to do it. So these are things that are, you know, down the road we're going to worry about. But right now, we're just getting started.
This is really, it's really interesting how you've kind of laid it out there. It really seems, it has a very libertarian kind of overtones, it seems, and
absolutely
no, they're very stress-free, few complications, like wow. it's pretty straightforward, isn't it? So
they actually asked us if there was any part to the membership, and all we said was, well, you just can't be a hater.
There you go.
So if anything about you is a hater, you just can't be a part of it.
Yeah.
So that was the only limitation we had.
Wow.
So.
Well, you're gonna have to get on top of things. It'll take about maybe 5-10 minutes to put a Minds group together, and I can almost guarantee you, you'll see that thing, you'll see it take off, and you'll see some people that'll be expressing interest and want to learn more about what it's all about and you know what it represents and stands for, and potentially even get involved. So, speaking of which, there's a young lady in your area. Did you ever manage to get in touch with her via?
No,
Minds?
I have not. I remember you gave me a connection.
St. Augustine. Well, because we were talking, you know, pirate history and lore and so forth. There's a lot of, you know, the St. Augustine area, as well as how far are you from St. Augustine?
I'm about 4 hours. It's about a 4-hour drive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I stayed up there for a couple of days, and it's a beautiful area up there.
Yeah.
I just didn't get to see everything I needed to see, though. But, there's a lot of good stuff going on.
And you literally live along what's known as Florida's Treasure Coast.
Right. There were a lot of sunken ships out off the coast here. There's a guy that's got a treasure museum.
Jeez.
And you go in there, and you can see all the different, you know, kind of a history of all these different treasure ships that they have found and others have found. Yeah, so it's pretty cool.
No kidding. Wow. So, all right. And just quickly then, we got about 20 minutes here based in accordance with our 90-minute allotment. A lot of times we tend to just get kind of one thing leads to the next, and we can't wrap things up until we get everything it is that we want to talk about out there on the table. So, but were you going to go into a little bit, provide us with a little bit of background and context as far as your personal history from, you were part of some sort of cult of some kind at one point way back in the day, were you not?
Yeah, I got involved in a group of people that were probably, I mean, people want to call them a cult. They were just a really hardcore right-wing church that just seemed to always want to require a lot of time out of the people that were involved.
And money?
So it did, time and money, yeah. And if you didn't have any money, it really didn't matter. They really wanted more of your time. Just you being it was a little bit too much. And so yeah, that was many moons ago. That was almost 30 years ago for me. But, yeah, but there are groups like that. People get into things when you're younger and you're more vulnerable. You get sucked into stuff, and all I can do is tell people to be on the lookout. Well, just be a little wary, you know. Just
how did you get in, Tom? How did you get in? How did you get out? And how long were you in for? How long were you part of that outfit? What was the name of this group that you were hooked up with? Or is that, I mean, it's public record, is it not? So, I mean, how big of a...
It's not really public record. I mean, I could choose to give it up. It's not a problem. It's a big church out. They're big in their own minds. They're called The Door or The Potter's House.
They still exist. Arizona. They're still in place.
Yeah, they still exist. Around. Yeah, they've been around for a while. And they come across on the surface as a reasonable, some kind of a church organization, but after a while you get involved, there's just never ending involvement, and you wind up really kind of getting lost in it. And they take a lot of young people in that are vulnerable, who are in different decision points in their life, and they really get them so overly involved after a while they don't realize how much they are involved.
It sounds a little. Cults are quite something. In fact, wasn't it you? You're familiar with the famous L. Ron Hubbard quote. You have that up on your Facebook page, I think, don't you? If you want to make money, don't write science fiction. Start your own religion.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. He said that. So. We don't intend to make a lot of money. I've heard that, but really, what I really, what really appealed to me was the ability that as a religious organization, you have the ability, you have a lot more latitude than you do as a standard nonprofit. We have a little bit more latitude to do things that you can't do as just a standard nonprofit. We can say that we're doing something for religious reasons, and this is who we are. So it gives us a lot more latitude. At least how we looked at it, and by the way, it's our constitutional right in this country, so we just decided that's what we wanted to do.
I wonder if that applies to people here, expats, you know, living in Korea, as you know, that are part of a startup of some kind, you know. So, and how much freedom or
But aren't you bound to the crown? Aren't you guys part of the whole Queen of England thing?
Not in South Korea, we're not.
Right, but aren't you still citizen of the crown?
I don't know about that. I don't think those laws apply to... I'm half Korean, basically, my citizenry, the rights that I'm granted.
No kidding.
Well, I've been here since 2002, the summer of 2002, so... And, you know, married to a Korean, and, you know, slowly but surely... you pass the language proficiency test and that sort of thing, and you gradually find your status being recognized more in a formal sense of, he's the real deal. He's sticking around, doesn't plan on going anywhere anytime soon. So hopefully
you're fully integrated into that culture. That's amazing.
Kind of in a lot of ways. Let's hold that there for now. And now I know this is a topic that Pirate Larry is really going to, he's going to just love Star Trek. We've talked about this before with Pirate Larry. Why don't we hear it from you just off the top here too, if we could, ye old scurvy dog up there in the crow's nest aloft. Just your whole thing with Star Trek and how it was so big way back in the mid to late 60s, and it just never really turned your crank. You were busy doing other things.
I mean, Star Trek is great. You know, my sister was, like, really into Star Trek. You know, I remember college, they had a lot of Star Trek, you know, fans that would show up in the dorm rooms and watch Star Trek. You know, eat popcorn and Star Trek. But, you know, for me, I was just, you know, by that time I was like playing music and, you know, reading all kinds of esoteric literature. And many times in my life I've stopped watching TV, and then, you know, I'll go back and I'll try to, you know, download what everybody else has been up to. But, and, you know, I watched Star Trek later on, and I took the kids to see the Star Trek movies, you know, when they were out You know, I don't think I ever adjusted to from Captain Kirk to Picard, but you know, that's kind of the gist of my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, I know how you feel about the whole Picard Next Generation thing. Scotty, we were talking about this, mentioned this to Tom just the other day, how Scotty was really quite territorial with the whole, the legacy, I guess, of the original series. And he, too, you know, not that he didn't have any bias or anything, of course, but dog in the fight, as it were. He felt, though, that there would only ever be one Star Trek, and that was, of course, the original series. So, Tom, what along with Joe Emanon here, who we've got, he's once again just one of regular the pirate crew members, tries his best to join us with each and as many shows as he can. So, but he's about your, he's a little older than you, but he claimed, I think he told me the other day, talking about how he remembers the first show coming on and just watched it quite religiously. Was quite taken and, you know, by the whole thing. Very avid supporter. And in fact, we got some comments of his that we're going to share with listeners here in just a moment or two. But just give us a quick rundown there, if you would, Tom. We've been hoping to put together a 50th anniversary show. It's kind of, we're just kind of a little bit too late for that right now. But it's still something I'd like to do and just mostly focus on the original series, because there's more than enough for Star Trek fans that we could do within the course of 90 minutes. Piece of cake.
What in God's holy name are you talking about? That's what I want to know.
Did I lose everybody?
What?
I lost the guests, okay, listeners.
Okay. I'm like, okay, what? Okay, so you want to know something about the early Star Trek?
Well, no, just how you first, your first impressions, how you first came into contact with it, where you were, was your first memories of the original series, and so on and so forth.
We were living in New Mexico at the time, and mm-hmm. I remember my parents telling me there was a new sci-fi show on. We actually had TV trays, and we got sat down and watched and ate dinner watching Star Trek come on the first time. And my dad was kind of into – he liked Twilight Zone, and he liked a few other shows that were out back then. And he was excited. He said, oh, yeah, there's a new sci-fi show coming on. We got to check it out. So, yeah, that's – I think I was – 1968, I was 10 years old, so.
You're a big fan. Go ahead.
They came out, I think, 66 to 67.
66. 66.
Yeah, so I was even younger. We were about 8 years old then, I guess. So, seven, 8 years old when it came out. So, for us, it was great. We were kids. It was sci-fi, you know. We like sci-fi.
Sure.
Spaceships flying around, and then it just kept seemed to having this rerun capacity constantly being rerun over the years.
Sure.
And so.
Yeah, I mean, look at the phenomenon that it did become. Who knows how that's going to change now with, as the original cast, basically, they die off, essentially. We just lost Nimoy, of course, Spock, a couple of years ago. And Shatner's 85. Uhura, she's getting up there, of course, too. Scotty, he's gone. Chekhov and Sulu are still around, but they're not getting any younger. That's for darn sure.
No.
So, yeah.
No, it's actually, what's his name, the guy that plays Sulu?
George Takei. George Takei.
Yeah, he's big on Facebook. His
stuff is constant. Oh, my.
Yeah,
when you think gay, think George Takei. That's not quite it. I got to work.
I hadn't really thought about it, but that's okay.
No, that's one of his slogans, because so many people get his name wrong. They say, well, that's one of the reasons he's got that little the shtick that he does. But it's because so many people say George Takei, George Takei. It's not Takei. It's Takei. Why? Because he's gay. Takei is gay.
I guess it works. Yeah,
it's
too funny. Yeah.
Yeah. But we've got a little bit of just ambiance that we've added to things here with people listening on the live stream. We'll probably be able to pick up that some of the original footage and episodes, some of the more better known scenes we've got streaming here as we carry on our discussion. But just going to quickly let Joe Zappardo had a comment here regarding this whole business of the business of Star Trek, that, what he thought with, in hearing about our talk today, he said, that's going to be a good show. I was watching Star Trek when it first came out. I think 1964, so I was 10, not quite, a couple years off there, Joe. It was literally the only science fiction show on television. And this is a lot like what you're saying here, too, Tom. The Twilight Zone and Outer Limits had both gone off the air, so had the Invaders. They did some astounding special effects, considering the technology of the day, even by today's standards. Maybe ask on the show exactly how many episodes they made of the original series, and if that includes the two-hour pilot. Not the black and white pilot.
You mentioned the Invaders. Yeah, just finished.
Not the black and white pilot, but the one that they resurrected that was based on the original pilot. Trekkies will get off on this, so go ahead.
You mentioned the Invaders.
He did,
did you ever watch the Invaders?
Oh, that goes back a ways. I had a book. I had one of the books when I was a kid. Yeah.
I can't believe the amount of, if you're a ufologist, you were a conspiracy theorist, that show was perfect. I mean, they literally mentioned conspiracy theories in one of the episodes. These aliens were training each other on how to act more human and how to behave in a bar. And they had one of their own coaches there that was helping to coach them. And I thought, wow, if you were a conspiracy theorist, this program must have been just pure heaven. But my brother and I growing up, it was just sci-fi TV. We never thought anything of it. But it was entertaining. It had a kind of a sardonic humor to it.
You missed our, I'm assuming you didn't catch it, the show that we did with Ken Thomas. Don't know if you're familiar with that name or not.
I did not see that.
Are you familiar with the Maury Island UFO incident?
No, I am not.
Oh, my. Well, you might want to check that out. We'll shoot you
Okay.
We'll get you the RSS feed here. I'm scanning through it myself. But what he thought was that there was one of these key players here. Damn, name escapes me at the moment here. But he was a CIA. He was a really well-known spook in the spook kind of world. Let's just see if we can head there and scroll down through the show notes and the name will jump out. I can only so much brain capacity here for recollection and storing things away. So, but that he claimed to have been, and this guy tied into the JFK assassination and all kinds of really strange kind of spooky, murky sort of events and occurrences and psyop type operations and you name it. So, but yeah, that was Ken Thomas, who was the founder and chief editor of Steam Shovel Press. He's a big Discordian type. He's part of that luminary, basically speaking of spoof religions and so forth, along with Adam Gorightly and whatnot. But Route 66, that's one of the things. I'm Here to Kill a King. And that aired, check this out, 1963, the night of the assassination. My father's name was Lee. What's this about killing a king? Right at the 24-minute mark, basically. So, damn, well, I'm just going to have to pass on that. Here we go. Oh, Fred Crisman. There's the guy I'm looking for. Fred Crisman. So that's the name you'll want to make a note of. And he claimed to have been, he had this on his identity, some sort of identification he had. He had as his employment, line of employment, not Hollywood actor, but that he was employed by Paramount Film Studios or something along those lines. And that he apparently was the inspiration for the Invaders. He was that guy. He was the protagonist of that. What was his name? The main character there from that
Roy
series.
Sins.
Pardon me?
Roy Thins was the actor, right?
Could have been.
Was that the character name? Was Roy Thins.
Uh-huh.
You're talking about the guy that was in the Invaders. Who did you say was the original character behind that?
Well, both. The character's name as well as the real life actor's name. So if you can
come up
with that. So, but yeah. Well, Fred Crisman's the name you're going to want. As far as that, now ties back into the whole Maury Island, Kenneth Arnold and the discs above Mount Rainier, just in the lead up to Roswell.
Right. Okay, I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you weren't around, I don't think, 1947, but you've probably heard of it.
No, I've heard of the story. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, how about, I mean, I'd like to quickly, before we call it a night here, talk a little bit about the Kung Fu series with David Carradine, as well as, of course, ufology. So whichever one you want to kind of latch onto there, you know, be our guest.
Oh, that was another great show. It was Kung Fu. Yeah, I loved that show. That was a great show. You could learn a lot of, there was always a lesson to, mm-hmm. to every episode, so you could learn a lot. I always enjoyed those. I think that came out when I was in high school.
71, 72, as I recall.
Yeah, I would have been a freshman in high school, yeah. We had a guy that was in high school that actually loved that show so much, he actually went and became one of those Shaolin monks. He found a chapter, and he went and got his arms branded, the whole thing. He went through the whole thing. And he started off, I remember, freshman year in high school, people were picking on him. By the time he was a junior, he was showing off exhibitions at school events, how to throw shurikens and, you know, do different Taekwondo moves. I mean, he was like a quick study. He went from being the kind of the fat, chubby kid that everybody picked on to somebody that everybody respected. So, yeah, that show had a big impact in its day. And it's well worth, if you ever get a chance to watch it, well worth the rerun time. The whole story is kind of timeless to each episode.
That's another torrent. Yeah, it's another torrent project we'll have to get on top of. Although I've noticed they've really been restricting access these days. It's tougher to get a hold of the torrents myself. I'm busy with a lot
Absolutely.
Of other things.
Yeah, it's a bummer. Yeah, VPN? They clamped down on all that. Yeah, no, I don't do any of that anymore.
Yeah.
I just gave it up. I've got a little Android box that I can go out and stream the net without downloading anything. So I like that a lot better than having to go hunt and download. And, you know, now they finally cracked down on a lot of that. So, yeah, so it's not as attractive as it used to be.
Well, going back to the Star Trek just for a moment, how many episodes were there then overall? Do you remember?
I think it was only like 3 years, so what is that? Honestly, I don't know. Game show fail. I completely lost.
I'm
the
ballparking.
I dropped a ball. I'm thinking 100 episodes.
Maybe. No, I think about, I'm guessing, I'm ballparking a little closer, I think the 76, maybe 78 tops.
I think you might be right. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, you're right, though. 3 seasons, absolutely. There was a second, after the second season, they announced cancellation. The letter writing campaign.
There are people that they litigate the different value of each season. Well, in this season they were thinking this, and in this season because of somebody's production input, we decided to have this kind of a tone. And then in the third season, we decided to go back. I didn't even know any of this drama was going on behind the scenes with the stories. I just was watching TV.
Yeah. Or the crew members and Shatner's, gargantuan ego, of course.
Oh my God. Yeah. So. Well, that's not something anybody has to report on. That's just who he is.
I just to each their own kind of thing. So, you know, he's just everybody, especially the Hollywood, that whole deal.
Think about all the time he wasted. Okay. Here's a guy that everybody loved. We want Captain Kirk. So then when he comes on Saturday Night Live, he dresses down anybody that liked the TV show as if they were some sort of an idiot for even thinking of liking the show.
That was a parody, Tom. I think you missed that. You failed. I think.
No, he got in trouble for that. He got in trouble because it was a parody. He got up and he did this little diatribe about get out of your mother's basement.
I thought it was hilarious.
Well, yeah, it was. It was intellectually humorous, but there were a lot of people that got pissed off by that whole thing. And he took a major amount of shit for that. And, that never went over well. I thought it was funny.
Saturday Night Live's considered to be, by some at least, 71st most memorable, skit or what have you. So, speaking
was
of which... Yeah, we've got another one. Speaking of Saturday Night Live and Star Trek and whatnot, Joe Zappardo, or Eminon, take your pick, has actually requested, I've got a copy I'd managed to download here. He seems to be, he's being blocked there in the East Coast of the States. But the famous bit with Belushi and Chevy Chase, do you remember that one from 1975, I guess is what it was when they were doing the parody of the Star Trek skit?
Yeah, they did one, and a lot of comedy teams were making fun of Star Trek. Star Trek had its own weird
mojo,
little niche. It was weird. I mean, at the time, it was kind of laughed at. But then it became more cult-like over time. During its time on Earth, it was like almost like Batman.
Yep.
You know, it wasn't really taken seriously at all. It was seen as just another sci-fi program. Yeah, yeah, whatever. And it was just ray guns and blasters. And a lot of people didn't get some of the messages or storylines they were trying to produce. A lot of people just didn't get it back then. I think they get it more now than they did then. Like, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So, got a little kung fu fighting here. Streaming people taking the show in live will be able to pick up on.
Got some nice pictures of the Trump voters there. I see.
With the slideshow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't realize all that work was out there. I just had no idea how much was out there. Resourceful.
So, all right. Let's see what we've got left to cover here. I think we've done a pretty good, it's amazing how time flies here. Every day, every episode, you know, it's just once a week we work on putting this together here. But it's just amazing the way the time flies. Couple quick things here. Billy Jack, did you not mention that to me when we were speaking there just a little while ago, that the cult classics, speaking of, you know, cult followings and whatnot, but there's that famous movie that came out in the, once again, mid to early 70s. Was it you or somebody else?
Yeah, there was that earlier movie that came out. Then they also did a remake several years later, which was 20 years later. It was some kind of a Billy Jack remake that had The Rock in it. What's his name? Dwayne Johnson.
Oh, no kidding, huh? Well, what is it that's so special then? What is it that, because I've never managed to watch the whole thing. It's on my list of...
It was one of these, you know, buck the system. The system mm-hmm. screwed somebody over and he finally gets over on the system. Kind of movies. Mm. And it incited a lot of emotional response from people. People got upset. People got engaged. So, yeah, that's kind of like something you drop on people and they get engaged. And I think it had more impact back then than it did now.
Oh, how about that? Now, I've had a few people tell me that, suggest that I should, you know, check it out. I've seen little bits and parts, but you just get so busy and spread out all over the place. It's hard to find.
It's almost a B movie. I don't think it was that great. I don't think it was that well produced. I think it's more of a B movie, but, you know, it's kind of required reading if you want to follow that whole story.
One of the last things I'd like to ask you about, not sure if Pirate Larry will have anything here as we close things off, but the link I shared with you, Patrick Diesel Job. Do you remember getting that one and who he was purported to have been?
You may have sent me that, but I don't remember if I saw it or not.
Well, by some accounts, he was the character who helped inspire Ian Fleming to
pen
the James Bond character.
Yeah, I saw that. That was amazing.
Yeah.
I do remember reading that. I do, yeah.
And so I'm not sure if you had any real thoughts on that or not, but before... Maybe we'll let you, you know, just kind of fire away at that one. What I was going to just kind of draw your attention, you might think is somewhat interesting, is that I actually had a chance to interview him in the mid-1990s. My father actually had drawn to my attention that this guy was living in our area up in the, once again, it's the central interior region of British Columbia out there on the west coast of Canada. And that, you know, he'd make for somebody that would be worth maybe my, you know, one's while as an up and coming aspiring, freelance journalist to actually take the time to speak to. I never did. And the reason for that was I thought about it and I just thought, you know, I just figured, well, does he really want the publicity? I mean, to me, it seemed like it'd be more of an intrusion. And I just figured, just leave the guy alone. He's already written his memoirs. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't want to. Patrick Diesel Job. He died in 2003. So this would have been about, he was born in 1913. He was 90 years old, I guess, then, if you do the math there. So, you know, he'd been up in his mid 80s by the time I would have had. But I just figured, just for the sake of privacy, like I just figured leave, you know, if he was to come to me, it's like, hey, got this great story for you. You know, it's a great lead here. More people should really know about and have drawn to the public's attention. I would have run with that, but quite a great scoop. But other than that, nah. But what an intriguing character and a fascinating story. So I'm not sure how big you're into that whole thing with the Bond series. I know myself, speak, you know, just a big,
actually, yeah, absolutely.
Sean Connery fan. big time. So you're manifest in multiple voices. Do you do a Sean Connery impersonation?
No, but I tell you something. The Ian Fleming story is one. Ian Fleming was the one that inspired me to write. And if you look at his history on writing and who he was, I remember seeing a documentary or something like that about Ian Fleming. Mm-hmm. He talked about the fact that when he would write, he would basically just start typing.
Yep.
He'd have a bottle of whiskey and he would just start typing. And he didn't stop until he was done. And he just would go on 2 or 3 day tears where he would just do nothing but writing. I heard that and I had been thinking about writing. And I'll tell you what, that story inspired me because here was somebody who didn't stop. He just began typing regardless of what came off the typewriter. He didn't really have a delete mechanism. It's what you typed, you just typed that. So you better think about twice what you're going to type. People, you really had to think about what you were typing. There was no backspacing, no deleting. He just let that stream of consciousness go to the typewriter. And that inspired me that we put a lot of rules on people's minds about writing. And there really aren't any. It's just really getting down to it and writing.
Jack Kerouac, first thought, best thought.
Yeah.
You know, so same kind of deal.
There are people that believe in the power of the first take in musicians. Mm-hmm. In recording studios, yeah, the power of the first take. It's like the first one. The rest were no good.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Bring It On Home, 12-bar blues and stuff, all those kind of good things you'd like talk about. So,
but if it's good... If it's good, we don't have to redo it, you know? If it's good.
Yeah, absolutely. Neil Young, it was a David Foster spoke to him, I guess. He did his first take was with, what was it, Tears Are Not Enough, Canada's version of USA for Africa back in the mid-1980s. And what was it? He's like, what the hell? What was his line now? But I can't even recall the line exactly, but he was like kind of Neil Young flat kind of deal. And David Foster, who, you know who he is, I'd imagine. Right.
Sure.
So the producer. And he was married to, was it
he was an amazing musician, too, as far as I recall.
Yeah. Kylie Jenner. Yeah. Is that her name now or his name or whatever name you want to
use? I don't know
the pronoun they use there. But he was, you know, the Jenner character was with, they shared that lady as a spouse, and she was actually Linda Thompson. There we go. She was actually one of Elvis's girlfriends on top of that.
Okay.
So, which reminds me, we should draw people's attention, listeners' attention, to the fact that we are going to be having a guest, hopefully here in the not-too-distant future, head of the Hawaiian Church of Elvis, join us. So, looking forward to that. Tom, any last talking points or things? I know we got to get your, we want to get your website, your URL links out there.
No, don't even contact you. No, we don't need to do that. Sorry.
Well, they're going in the show notes.
I'm just kidding.
Don't forget to like, share, and
we've got free people of thecosmos.org. Mm-hmm. They can go to that website. It just describes what it is. And people go, that's it? And I'll go, well, yeah, that's it. Yeah, they can go to there to find out more if they want to contact me. And check it out for all they care. And,
we've got your YouTube multimedia link here as well, too. Your brother, let's not forget, Everthink TV. Could you just give us a quick rundown of what he's essentially got on the go there?
Well, we're doing this multimedia company. So we're doing videos. We're doing, you know, videos for websites. We're a small business, once it needs a website video, that kind of thing, or small reality type shows, that kind of stuff. We're just kind of getting started, doing some local advertising, that kind of thing, and getting our feet wet. We want to do more. We're going to do some more this summer. It's just kind of getting started. We're just getting off the ground.
As is the church. If it is formally, you refer to it, the Free People of the Cosmos.
That's right. And you're welcome to donate. You're welcome to donate at your leisure. You know, we'll create a sacrament if you need a sacrament. if you like your sacrament, you can keep your sacrament. Okay.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, you could maybe think of doing something like what we are here via the Robinhood and WPRPN. We've targeted half of all network revenue, half of all the net profit for public redistribution, giving back to various charitable works. It's as simple as that. We're kind of bound by that under the way that we have things structured and set up. Very charitable approach to doing things. Whether or not we actually incorporate, I guess, or form what we have. It is here, you know, put it together on the basis of being a religion or not. I have no idea. It sound, it'd have to be very spoofy, of course, because come on, let's get real. You know, seriously now. Larry, Pirate Larry, let's hear it from you. We're kind of, now's a good time for you to maybe jump in and help us out with this one. But, do you think, is there any way of doing that with the, you know, Pirate Radio podcast and the wider network, venture as a whole?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, what Tom is saying is that, now is a time where you've got the technology, you can be creative. People look for that. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of kids graduate from college and the university, and they study film and they study, you know, video, and they're up on all the software and the cool editing techniques and everything, but, you know, there's no jobs. And then yet everybody has a Facebook page, and a lot of these people, you know, have shops and stuff, and a nice little video for their shop, you know, would be a cool thing. And they're starting to get it with, you know, like people uploading pictures and selfies, you know. But kind of take it to the next level and go, this is a shop, this is who we are, this is what we do, you know, come on by, you know, we're cool people. It makes people, like, you know, less afraid of everybody else that's out there, you know. You begin to see, oh, this person there, yeah, they're cool, that person, they're cool. And video can do that, you know, mm-hmm. a lot, where the advertising, you know, the kind of structured advertising that people have been doing in the past, you know, the fire sale at the used car lot kind of advertising, or we're giving away TVs.
Come
you know,
on
that
down.
Kind of thing. That's pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's honest, pretty honest, dead, Larry, you know? Honest Larry's but, used car sales lot.
Hey. Honest Pirate Larry.
We'll have to talk about more about all this later. Although I will just to let people know, it's we are making some definite gains here on the cryptocurrency front. So that's quite interesting to see and to think about where that could potentially all lead. We've in fact to the point, not just outside of the help and advice, the tips and pointers that David Zimbeck recently provided for us and shared. But we've actually got someone who just a few minutes ago reached out and offered to help develop the coin itself. So, this is a person who to this point will remain nameless, of course. But that's just kind of, this is like just, you know, breaking news basically. So it's all happening here in live time, folks. History unfolding, just these little ripples that the Robin Hood manages to, create. Over the course of time, God only knows where it all might lead. So, Tom, I'm not sure. We got your links and everything. Hopefully we've managed to address all the main issues that you were hoping to,
hey,
to hit on.
Thanks
today.
For having me on, man. This was fun. Thanks for having me. I don't know if I contributed anything meaningful to anyone's life, but I appreciate you having me on and taking the time. And let me share my little world with your world. It's been fun.
Yeah, no, it's great. You know, once again, we're running now an hour 45, and even with that being the case, it always seems to, time just seems to shoot on by, and just in the blink of an eye, really. So before you know what's happening, it's another episode has managed to find its way into the archives, and time to start looking forward to the next week. So. What we do, in fact, speaking of next week, have coming up for people is, as was mentioned earlier, although we're not too clear on the order to this point, but the Hawaiian Church of Elvis is one of the, I think we're going to have a lot of fun with that one here at some point over the next short while. Thomas Sheridan, who is an Ireland-based student of esoterica, as a public speaker and so forth, easy to find on YouTube for anyone that is so inclined. Sticks and Hammer, 666, is another pretty well-known YouTube personality. This is the kind of people we're looking for, folks like Tom and Sticks and Hammer and Thomas Sheridan and things that are a little more kind of obscure, perhaps out of the way, but interesting and manage hopefully to captivate people's interest and attention. Not only that, but episode 50, today was 48, folks, so we've got two more weeks and it's going to be episode 50. We're going to have open lines, call-ins, all those sort of good things. Pirate Larry, I'm not sure if you have any thoughts on episode 50 or for that matter what we managed to put together here today, but now would be probably the best time. It's a chance to let the world know what it is that what's on your mind as far as what maybe you'd like to see in the next couple of weeks when we put together our birthday show, as it were, because it is the one-year anniversary, too.
You know, yeah, we should have, like, everybody come back on. Like,
yeah.
You try to get a little bit of everybody. That would be great.
Sure.
You know, to hear from everybody. And, that you know, you wouldn't have to have everybody on all at once. They'd just be on for, like, 5 minutes and say hi. And happy 50th. And then, you know, we'd get to hear from as many of them as we can. That would be great.
And that's,
yep. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. This was a great show. It was wonderful, you know, very informative and entertaining at the same time. You know, I really like, you know, what Tom's doing. And
yeah.
I'm already, you know, I'm already a free member of the galaxy. So, you know, that's great.
Yeah. I like myself. For me, it's refreshing from my standpoint because of some of the heavy topics that we cover from time to time. You come away from it. I know, speaking for myself at least, thinking, oh geez, like what's the world coming to? This is just too much. This is too much for me to bear really. So, but something like what we managed to put together here today, very, quite pleased and refreshing. And it's a novel approach and, had a great time. So, thanks once again to both of you guys, Tom and Larry, as well as everyone listening up in the
it's been lots of fun.
YouTube streaming land. So we're going to hopefully everyone enjoyed the slideshow that we had going. We're going to close things out here with, I think, one of Tom's tunes. Is there any one in particular that you'd like us to select or choose off of your Freeples? Music site?
I got nothing. Whatever makes your boat float, that's what I say. If it makes your boat float, you go ahead and play it.
All right. Well, so we're gonna. Nothing. I think we've done a few of these here. So, like, Free People of the Cosmos. I don't think we've heard that to this point. So we'll get that queued up here. And
it's probably just the station ID.
No, it's got a bit of a reggae beat to it. So thanks once again, everybody, for being a part of things today, dropping in and listening to episode 48 of Pirate Radio Podcast with Tom Schaefer. On behalf of the Robin Hood and its crew, as always, I'm your Chief Communications Officer, Jaffe Ryder. Until we meet again out on the high digital seas, tally-ho.